Welcome, listeners, to a new episode of Criminal Mind, a brand new true crime podcast that delves into shocking cases that all tie into mental health. I'm Raviv, and today's episode is about Rachel Runyon. Just like last week's case, this one also had limited credible sources to read, but I think that I was able to piece it together pretty well, and I hope that you find this case captivating. As always, I want listeners to approach our episodes with caution. There may be information in the episode that can be triggering. Rachel Runyon's story is heartbreakingly sad, and you'll see why as the story continues on. I don't want to delve too much into why cases like this are infuriating, but I think that you'll feel similar to how I felt when I was researching this case. This is another one that I'm pretty sure I found on Reddit, so thank you so much to the Reddit community for always introducing others to lesser-known cases that need more eyes on them. And with that, we're going to strap in and walk through the story of Rachel Runyon together. Welcome to Criminal Mind. 3-year-old Rachel Runyon was playing with her two brothers in a local park on August 26, 1982. The park was located just behind her family's home in Sunset, Utah. The kids had asked their mom, Elaine, if they could play at the park by themselves while she went inside the house to make lunch. Elaine immediately expressed hesitation, but they seemed so excited, so she allowed them to. While she was in the house, an unknown man approached the children, pulling out a very well-known kidnapper's ruse. He asked them if they wanted some bubble gum, or to go and get ice cream. This is just so blatantly and disgustingly obvious. And the worst part is that these kids were all 5 and under. Rachel's oldest brother, Justin, was 5. And the youngest under the age of 3. Remember, Rachel was only 3 years old, so if someone asked if they wanted candy or sweets, are they honestly going to say no? Do they know the warning signs of a potential kidnapper or even the notion of not talking to strangers? I don't know, and I immediately had a lot of sadness when reading about this case because these kids just wanted to play and were so easy to lure. This man knew that, and Justin, the older brother, knew what to do. He actually immediately detected that something was off and told the man no. He had been taught to not leave with a stranger. But Rachel was tempted by the promise of sweets, and she got up and left with him. I know that some of you are probably going to say, well, why didn't Justin try and stop her? He did, but he was 5 years old, very easy to confront and manipulate, small, and how was he going to stop a grown man? His response was probably the smartest and the only thing he could do, according to Medium. He told Rachel to come back and stay with him, and she initially listened and started walking back towards him. But things got scary fast when the unidentified man scooped her up and shoved her into his blue Ford Pinto. Justin immediately ran back to their house to tell his mom, who right away called the police to report the kidnapping. A search began, but the Runyons didn't have an answer until 24 days later. On September 19, 1982, a man in Utah saw something unusual floating in the water off a dirt road. He had pulled off during a drive with his family to get some air and stretch, and when he saw what he thought was an object, he first examined it with a stick, and then realized that it was a small human body. Police came onto the scene and quickly learned that it was the body of a young girl. She was found naked and hogtied near Mountain Green, 20 miles from the Runyons' home. According to Crime Online, coroners could not determine an official cause of death because of the poor state of her remains. There was an obvious witness to the kidnapping of Rachel, her older brother Justin, but he was only 5 years old at the time. How much information would he be able to provide the police with? Would he be able to provide accurate information in a time of such deep grief and stress? At such a tender age, I can only imagine that Justin felt overwhelmed by the murder of his sister. It was quite obvious that she had been murdered, and police thought so as well, so their first priority was finding the man who kidnapped her at the playground. And Justin's first-hand testimonial was the best place for law enforcement to begin their search. Justin gave them some basic information. A man took her, and he was African-American. But there was some immediate discrepancy about this information. According to Crime Online, Justin said, quote, "I don't know if it's a black person, Mom," the boy said, based on information provided by Elaine. Justin's overall description of the kidnapper was a black male between the ages of 25 and 35, a mustache, and nearly 6 feet tall. What I find incredible is that he was able to provide a basic description of the vehicle, which he said had four doors, was dark blue, and had wood grain stripes on the side, according to the Salt Lake Tribune. A composite sketch was made based on the description that Justin provided, but he told police that the sketch did not match what the man looked like. I honestly don't expect a five-year-old to be able to provide completely accurate details to craft a composite sketch, especially one who has just been through immeasurable trauma. I'm not a doctor, but I have experienced PTSD, and it's very hard to remember small details or really remember much at all when trauma is so fresh. Even when it's not fresh, anytime you go through trauma, your memory can be affected. What's absolutely mind-boggling about this case is that there was literally no other real movement on it until years later. Years! What the hell happened during the time in between? There was one small incident about 2.5 years later, but it was honestly just bullshit. There was a message written in the bathroom of a local laundromat that said, "Beware, I'm still at large. I killed the little Runyon girl. Remember, beware." The person who wrote it ended up claiming responsibility at some point. I don't know the name of said person or any other information about this incident, but it was nothing more than a disrespectful prank. The next big break in this case came in 1989, when police thought they found a suspect. But the catch is, he was an inmate at the Utah State Prison. According to the Deseret News, the unnamed man was reported to the police by his sister, who told them that he kidnapped and killed Rachel Runyon. I find it quite odd that the man was never named. He still hasn't been to this day. Wouldn't they want the public to know his name, so anyone with information about him could come forward? Or do they feel confident in the information they were already getting? I don't know, but the suspect's sister ended up taking back everything she told police, and was charged with theft for taking informant fees. What's really wild to me is the overall lack of information about this suspect, not just that the police never shared his name. There was nothing about why they viewed him as a suspect, besides just his sister's report. I'm assuming that that's the only info they had, and no concrete evidence. I feel like that would have been shared, but it wasn't. And that was the end of that suspect. Sunset Police Chief Ken Eborn has always seemed to be on top of this case with eagerness. According to the Salt Lake Tribune, quote, "Police have organized 10 full three-ring binders of case information from their own city and outside agencies, including Ogden and Davis County, and even the FBI. Police also have about 10 banker boxes full of phoned-in leads," end quote. So it's not like they weren't and haven't been actively working on this case over the last 40 years. It actually seems like they were pretty organized and always believed that the killer was at large somewhere. There was no actual evidence found at the scene where Rachel's body was discovered, but in 2007, Police Chief Eborn, quote, "used a grant from the Utah Attorney General's office to pay for DNA testing of items found near the girl's body," end quote, as reported by the Salt Lake Tribune. So they were active. The police have always wanted to solve this crime. But here's where it gets weird. This case picks up steam again in 2020, a little less than 2 years ago. Police Chief Eborn told the media that they have a good lead on the case, and he seemed quite confident. Like before, police received a tip from an anonymous to the public person who told them to look at this particular suspect, who was also unnamed. They said that family members were also suspicious of this suspect, but nobody spoke up because the composite sketch released, which was created based on Justin Runyon's description of the kidnapper, portrayed a black man, and the suspect is not a man of color. This is quite interesting to me because there was a lot of discrepancy when Justin originally showed apprehension about the sketch and was unsure if the kidnapper was an African-American man. The Runyons hired a private investigator, Jason Jensen, who said that this new suspect had served time in prison for child sex abuse, and he also lived in the local area of the Runyons. This suspect seemed to fit the profile that they'd been looking for, but nothing was concrete yet. The kicker? The man died the year prior. We don't know how, but it makes things more complicated in regards to this case. They were able to extract some of the man's DNA to test, but his passing means that the police never got to question him or at least speak to him. They had to rely on speaking with friends and family, hoping to get a bigger picture or just any information they could pertaining to this case. And to be honest with you, that's it for this case. There are no new updates from 2021 that I could find. No info about the DNA that was tested from the deceased suspect. nothing new at all. And it's just infuriating because this whole case feels very secretive. Why did the police not share the names of any suspects they had, just to try and piece together a story? Why was the most recent suspect not shared with the public at all? It just feels like this story ran dry too quickly. They found Rachel Runyon's body. They created a composite sketch based on Justin Runyon's memory of the kidnapper. There was very obvious discrepancy and confusion, and over the years, minimal suspects. The issue with the composite sketch, I think, is the obvious and first problem. If they couldn't get a correct or somewhat accurate composite sketch, how the hell would anyone be able to call in if they noticed the man in public somewhere? They wouldn't be able to, so that shuts down that possibility real quick. Besides that, they questioned a 5-year-old kid who had quite clearly just been through some immense trauma and was grappling with the after effects of that, which is how this case ties into the realm of this podcast. Again, I'm not going to diagnose anyone with anything on this show, but it appears that Justin was showing some textbook signs of post-traumatic stress disorder, which could easily affect his memory of what happened that day on the playground when Rachel was kidnapped. Who even knows what happened, or if his recollection is accurate? The overall lack of correct information is what doomed this case from the get-go. Rachel Runyon's killer has never been found, and there is zero new information about what could have happened to her. It's infuriating, and I hope that someday, sooner than later, there is at least some justice for this poor little girl and her family. Thank you again so much for checking out Criminal Mind. If this is the first episode you've listened to, there are 8 other episodes you can listen to that we've released so far. As always, you can reach out to me on socials at IamRavive across the board if you want to give me any feedback, which is always appreciated, or just chat about one of these cases. I'm also always taking suggestions for future cases to cover, so if you know of any that fit within the realm of Criminal Mind, please let me know. I'd also love to know what y'all are thinking about this seasons format that I'm trying out. Essentially, I'm going to run this podcast in seasons, with each season ranging from 6 to 10 episodes. It's just easier for me to manage that way, but I want to know what your thoughts are on that format. Again, if you like what you're hearing so far on Criminal Mind, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, rate us 5 stars, and share it with all your true crime addicted friends. See you next time. Love, Revive.